Today's show is sponsored by StrongDM. Are you managing your remote team as they work from home? Managing a gazillion SSH keys, database passwords, and Kubernetes certs? Meet StrongDM. Manage and audit access to servers, databases, and Kubernetes clusters, no matter where your employees are. With StrongDM, easily extend your identity provider to manage infrastructure access, automate onboarding, offboarding, and moving people within roles. Grant temporary access that automatically expires to on-call teams. Your admins get full auditability into anything anyone does. When they connect, what queries they run, what commands they typed. It's full visibility into everything. For SSH, RDP, and Kubernetes, that means video replays. For databases, it's a single unified query log across all database management systems. StrongDM is used by companies like Hearst, Peloton, Betterment, Greenhouse, and SoFi to manage access. It's more control and less hassle. Start your free 14-day trial today at strongdm.com/cloudcast. That's strongdm.com/cloudcast. StrongDM, manage and audit remote access to your infrastructure. Today's Cloudcast is brought to you by Datadog, a full-stack monitoring platform that integrates with over 400 technologies like Gremlin, PagerDuty, AWS Lambda, Spinnaker, and many more. With rich visualizations and algorithmic alerts, Datadog can help you monitor the effects of chaos experiments, identify weaknesses, and improve the reliability of your systems. Visit datadog.com/cloudcast to start a free 14-day trial and receive one of Datadog's famously cozy t-shirts. That's datadog.com/cloudcast.
Cloudcast Media presents from the massive studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is The Cloudcast with Aaron Delp and Brian Gracely, bringing you the best of cloud computing from around the world.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are, and welcome back to the Cloudcast. We are coming to you live from the massive Cloudcast studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina. Aaron, we are back to doing shows again, at least for this one week. It's good to be back with you. How are you, man?
Yeah, doing good. Happy to be back, and yeah, we're actually on the same episode together, which doesn't happen as much anymore, but glad to be doing it.
No, the schedules typically don't permit. Wish we could do it more often, but you're doing a whole bunch of crazy stuff. The time zones don't seem, even though we live in the same city, the time zones don't seem to work. But that's okay. That's all right.
Yeah.
So for this show, we're not going to change up the format a whole lot. We're going to skip Cloud News of the Week. We're going to do sort of our mid-year review show. So we typically do a mid-year review show. We do an end-of-year review show. This isn't just kind of us reading the news of the week. It's more of us kind of giving some perspective and analysis and so forth. Before we get to that, I want to hit on two kind of quick things. I'll call them Cloud News of the Week. They're just sort of thank yous for the first half of the year. We went over 7 million listens for the length of the show. So I'll, just to put it in this in perspective, about 12, 14 months ago, we were at 5 million. We just hit over 7 million. So thank you to everybody who listens. Thank you to everybody for telling a friend. when you think about it, I think the first year we did this show, we had like 25 shows and we did maybe 10,000 listens. So put that in perspective. Just amazing that the people keep coming back week after week.
Yeah, absolutely. And huge, huge thanks to everyone. And huge thanks to everyone who's continued to listen through the pandemic. We've never really talked about it on the show, but I mean, it's throughout the kind of the podcast industry for anyone that follows it is, you know, the numbers are, I won't say are way down, but the numbers are down. And when you think about it, it kind of makes sense, right? Because most people consumed a lot of podcasts, you know, during commutes or during working out or mowing the lawn or doing, and there's a lot of activities that we're just not doing as much on a regular basis anymore. I personally don't listen to as many podcasts anymore. I certainly try to, but my commute is gotten a lot shorter and I'm not on airplanes anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we definitely saw like in March and a little bit of April, you know, things were off. I think people were just, you know, losing their mind. And like you said, you just didn't have that. It was weird because we all felt like we had free time. Well, or at least, you know, new time in our day, but it just wasn't getting filled. And the numbers have started to come back up. We've seen it sort of tick back up. So it seems like people are, getting back into some sort of routine where, you know, I think they're now starting to come to this realization that like, this is what 2020 is going to look like. Like, I don't expect a lot of people are necessarily going back to offices if, you know, if they're sort of tech and so forth.
And that's probably the theme for the rest of the show. And what we'll be talking about
is
new routines for the year, right?
The other thing I want to send out a big thank you to all the sponsors who've sponsored the show. Obviously, it could have been very easy for people to kind of, you know, go, hey, you know, we've got better ways to spend money, or, you know, we're cutting back on things. Want to thank everybody who sponsored the show: Datadog, MongoDB, StrongDM, Taos, Studio 3T, UpCloud, Divi Cloud, and Logs.io. So big thanks to all those folks for sticking with us, for getting on board. You know, we think we've got a great community. We're glad to help companies that want to get the word out. But if folks get a chance, you know, follow up with the sponsors. They've been great in kind of helping us keep the show going. And, you know, big thank you to them as well.
Yep.
So, Aaron, you know, back on March 18th, you and a good friend of the show, Ken Hoy, did a show. You know, this was right about when we were seeing, at least in the United States, states were starting to sort of shut down. You know, Europe had been through this. Asia had been through this. Europe was in was in it. I mean, neck deep in it. And you guys did a show of kind of working from home tips and tricks. Can you even remember the mindset at the beginning of this thing? Like what you guys were kind of thinking? Because I think people thought like, oh, well, this will be a couple of weeks, maybe like 3 weeks or something.
Yeah. And it's interesting because like it seems so long ago. And it's this weird kind of theme, right? Like this working from home almost feels like, you know, this in my startup days, right, where it's like you do a month or two and it feels like so long. And that's what we feel like when you're just like you're super busy and you're trying to figure out new routines and you're constantly doing things. And so hopefully that show helped everyone. But I think Ken and I both kind of saw this coming of like, holy crap, this is going to change, you know, things for a good long while. The other thing I would add too, personal life thing, the weekend before we recorded that show, my family, my youngest does a cheerleading, and we were at a competition down in Disney. And we were at Disney the weekend before, like we were at Disney the Sunday before they shut down that following Monday. And it was so interesting just to even see that mindset there of like, we're down there, we're there for a reason, but like it's starting to hit. And like we were super like anxious, I think is probably a good word for it. We're like, oh man, like, cause it's like on the news, like, oh my God, all these people go to Disney. And we were one of those people and we didn't try it. And so like trying to be safe, trying to figure all this out. And it's before we learned a lot about the virus. And so I think, you know, this new normal that's kind of setting in and these new routines that are setting in, we're understanding it now, but man, back in March, it was just lots of unknowns.
Yeah. It was, you know, you had to deal with, you know, what was going on with your kids' school. You were, you know, people were talking about, you know, just, we're still seeing, you know, unbelievable numbers of unemployment. You were trying to figure out what that meant for, you know, whether they were companies that you worked with, whether they're going to stay afloat, you know, whether your favorite local place was going to be around. And I think we've sort of seen some normalization of stuff. I mean, it's good to see, unfortunately, other parts of the world are doing much better than the United States in terms of kind of getting it under control. But, you know, we haven't yet seen anything, you know, knock on wood, we haven't seen sort of like mass layoffs per se, like in the tech industry. We've seen it, unfortunately, in certain industries. I don't know if that's another shoe that has to drop. You know, people have been kind of resetting guidance on stuff and so forth. I mean, we've seen some, but not, you know, massive. Like, I don't feel like this is like 2001 levels, which is sort of strange given all the kind of, you know, day-to-day worker unemployment. But, it is weird. I mean, it's, you know, it's the craziest one for me. I mean, there's a lot of craziness going on, but like, I mean, in 2 or 3 months, like Zoom has become a verb. I mean, it's become a mainstream every day. You just people, oh, well, that'll just be a Zoom. Like, you know, and you're just like, wow, that little company, whatever they did right, you know, just, it was easy to make, video calls for like grandma and, you know, your cheerleading practice or whatever it was, like that. It's amazing how fast that one little, that's like, to me, that's the big, unfortunately, that's the big winner out of all this stuff.
Yeah. Agreed. And then, you know, all of their kind of encryption and privacy, you know, snafus aside.
Yeah.
I mean, they pretty much came through,
Right.
Without a doubt. Like, they didn't have any super huge outages or anything else like that. And they allowed a lot of people. Yeah. I mean, you know, professional life and personal life. They allowed a lot of people to stay connected in a time when they needed it.
Yeah. So let's talk a bit about, we're going to dive into sort of the year. I want to hit on the other kind of big, we're going to hit on the cloud companies and some of the technology stuff. But I want to hit on the other big thing that I think a lot of people are talking about. This has become the year of remote work, whether we joke about it being the year of virtual workspaces or VDI or whatever. But one thing I'm kind of seeing, and obviously throughout the year, we hear about people, looking for new jobs or, hiring trends, but we're seeing companies that forever never were going to let anybody work remotely are now we're okay with that. We're open to, you working wherever. It could be Raleigh, it could be Austin, it could be Cleveland, it could be St. Louis. Do you think they'll actually stick with them saying that, or is this just sort of a trend for right now?
So full disclosure, this is kind of what I cover in my day job now. So I've been actually talking to a lot of customers and speaking about this a lot, all virtually, of course. And I would say the biggest thing is it's not the company's decision. This will be kind of a mandate for a lot of places going forward, right? Especially here in the States, but worldwide, what if there's another flare up of COVID-19? There's lots of shifts going on. I talked to many customers who it was Friday afternoon. They had zero remote work capability. And by Monday, everyone had to be out of the office. So how do you do that in, 48 to 72 hours, right? And so the shift is going to happen. And then I think what's going to happen, though, is it'll come back. The pendulum has swung really, really hard one way, and it's going to come back. But then there will be swings and shifts back and forth. And so I see it more of an elastic solution on demand that's, going to spike up and spike down going forward, and it's just a new consideration for companies going forward.
I think folks are gonna, I don't know, and that's the thing, I think there's people that appreciate being able to work in places that are better cost of living price points and so forth or whatever. Obviously we're sort of living proof of that stuff. But I think the other thing, I don't think people love working at home necessarily. I think there's trade-offs that go with it. The other thing I think we're going to see a lot of is, I think this is going to be the first time for a lot of companies, they realize what it's like to work with some of these elastic services. I'll give you an example. My neighbor works in IT for a manufacturing company. They manufacture cosmetics. And, so he's working from home. He basically runs, a lot of the IT stuff. And he said, one of the things I did was we had to spin up, all these VPN services all of a sudden. And he's like, yeah, I spun up, Citrix NetScaler in AWS and just, threw it in a autoscaling group. And it just worked. And his boss was like, well, what magic did you do? And he's like, I did this thing that they teach you in AWS training, 101, how do you scale an application? And the guy looked at him like, well, we can't do that stuff with VMware. We could never do this stuff with, and he's like, yeah, that's just how the cloud works. So I think there's going to be a lot of sort of, first time aha moments for, a technology that's been around for, almost a decade now.
Well, and we, this, I think that right there hits on the big theme of all the rest of our topics, right? They can all be boiled down to this. When we started this show, there was this trend in our industry, which was physical infrastructure to cloud and then hardware to software. You and I had kind of a running joke behind the scenes, and I'm sure we mentioned on the podcast once or twice, it's like, I'm never getting a job in infrastructure again. My next job is going to be in software, because we felt like that was, well, now I feel like we're moving. It's, now it's not software. Now it's as a service.
Yep.
And we've talked about it on the show a couple times, but you'll see this in the themes from the first half of the year. Everything is going as a service now. So now it's that's the big trend going forward.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it does sort of beg the question, right? It's, should anybody really be running their own software anymore? Right. I mean, you look at, You know, obviously we talk about the big three clouds all the time, and we'll kind of get into where they are. But I mean, you look at, you know, companies that, and I'll just point out some of the ones that were like, you know, open source companies, but like, you know, MongoDB, Confluent, DataStax. I mean, HashiCorp just the other day announced, you know, their stuff running as a service. Red Hat's done this. VMware's done this. It, you know, like we're seeing every major, even the major software companies are going, you know, the future is not stuff being installed by customers. That doesn't mean tomorrow it all goes away and people will freak out and go, oh, there'll be lots of on-prem stuff. But like where the investment's going and where the growth in their businesses is in, you know, stuff running as on-demand services. And that changes some stuff. It changes, you know, physical boundaries and how you think about security. But like, I feel like this is, you're right. I think this is going to be another one of those tipping points where people are going to be asking that question. It's like, why are we running our own? You know, like at what point do we stop running our own software and start moving that up the stack to somebody else runs that for us? And then we do something maybe on top of that.
Yeah. And this is, you know, we were, you know, when serverless was kind of the, you know, one of the big waves, right? And what was serverless at the end of the day? It was, I don't want to run my own software. I want to have, you know, everything as a service, you know, functions as a service, if you will. And this is just, you know, a continuation of that model of you know, all of the tools in the toolbox are moving to as a service models.
Right. Let's dive a little bit into the three or four big clouds. What have you seen, you know, at least first half of the year from, you know, from those big three, four, five players?
Yeah. So the biggest one, I mean, we'll just go through them kind of like we usually do. AWS. I mean, AWS is over $10 billion for a quarter. But what's interesting there is, okay, great. Yeah, they've had those numbers. And we've kind of always said, yep, they keep getting bigger. I feel like there's not as many big announcements anymore, though. It's almost like, you know, how do you move the needle on a $10 billion per quarter business? And the numbers, I mean, they're pretty amazing and pretty insane, but they just keep getting bigger and bigger, which is, you know, I'll be honest, is good and bad, right, for the industry.
Yeah, it's the thing that you always run into with companies that get to a certain size, and this is not, you know, unique to the cloud. Like we've seen this with, you know, like EMC at the time, or you saw this with Cisco, or you saw this with, you know, even Intel or whatever. Like at some point when you get really big, you're going to do new stuff. You know, AWS announced a low code thing this last week or something, and we'll dive into that in another show. But like at some point, the people that run the company go, yeah, but I need $1 billion idea. I need $5 billion idea. And this is where, you know, you start to see some interesting things, which is like, do they have $1 billion ideas or $5 billion ideas on a whiteboard somewhere, or do we see them start acquiring stuff, right? And we haven't seen AWS necessarily acquire a lot of stuff, but we have seen Amazon, the company, the parent company, acquire stuff. And you wonder if, you know, like there's this connectedness between Amazon getting into new markets and going, oh, like autonomous driving. Well, there's a massive amount of computing that goes along with that. And so, you know, maybe owning part of the supply chain, then there's this massive computing thing that comes. And then you start going, oh, well, that will drive, you know, what, you know, their relationship with Ford or Daimler or, you know, like, so you wonder if you can actually think about how they're going to grow in the same way, because they don't look like, you know, the technology companies from before.
Yeah. And here's something else to think about in conjunction with that is along that $1 billion idea concept. How many acquisitions and or net new products in our industry have grown to something like that? I can think of, you know, like Citrix with NetScaler. I can think of VMware with Nicira. But you can probably count on one or two hands the number of $1 billion ideas within these larger companies.
Right.
Whether it's build from the ground up or acquire and grow. So, you know, it is a little bit of like, you know, the unicorns in valuation becomes even harder when it comes to actual $1 billion, not $1 billion valuations, but $1 billion in sales and $1 billion in revenue. It's hard. It's really hard.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me take Azure. I'll take you had AWS. I'll take Azure. So Azure's been a little bit different. I think you know, partially because you know, Azure is, you know, it's obviously Azure, and we've seen that continue to grow. You know, debatable whether it's growing as fast as Microsoft or as fast as AWS or not, because of the way they do accounting, but it's growing very healthy. I think we've seen a lot of interesting innovation with around GitHub, and I think GitHub's going to go down to be maybe one of the great acquisitions of all time, just in terms of, you know, reach to developers, the importance of developers. You know, we're seeing them begin to put some things into GitHub that, you know, are really kind of cloud services. So it's like, oh, they kind of do a function or a serverless thing. Oh, they do CI and CD within the cloud. They're going to, you know, they do some interesting things with collaboration. Like, I think that's going to be the place where, you know, Microsoft is able to do some things. Obviously, we've seen Teams, you know, take off during the COVID thing, right? I mean, we're seeing it in commercials. It's probably, you know, in the top two or three, along with Zoom and, you know, I'm not sure what the third one would necessarily be. Maybe it's still WebEx. Maybe it's Google Meet. But that's expanding out. And anytime that, you know, you've got a tool that the enterprise has to use all the time, that becomes sticky for Microsoft being able to throw that into ELAs and grow other stuff and so forth. So, like, there's a lot of positive
and real
things.
Real quick, too, yeah. I will say this, and I won't resist a chance to, you know, a theme of the podcast over the years, I won't resist a chance to throw Skype under the bus. I'm so happy that Teams has become the dominant one versus Skype.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. Go ahead.
If you've listened to the show for a long time, you know our love affair with Skype is dwindling. But, you know, the other thing with Azure that's sort of interesting to kind of watch is, you know, when this thing all took off, you know, and people were ramping up how much cloud they were using, you know, Azure did go through some stuff in terms of having to figure out how to manage capacity. And there were some early stories about, you know, they weren't down by any means, but like they were cutting off their free tier and they were kind of prioritizing certain customers. And, you know, that sort of lends itself to going back to, and I know, you know, people like Corey Quinn and Charles Fitzgerald and others talk about, you know, one of the big trends you got to watch in cloud is always like CapEx spend. And you know, people kind of lump in, you know, $5 billion and $7 billion or $10 billion in a year or a quarter. Well, you know, $1 billion, $2 billion here, you get behind your competitors for a few quarters in a row, and that becomes either a lot of capacity or a lot of data centers. So, you know, as much as Microsoft is doing a nice job probably being more diverse than the other clouds, you know, from, you know, the cloud itself to developer tools to collaboration, you know, there is some question as to whether or not they've built out enough capacity to compete with Amazon. And obviously, we know Google has massive amounts of infrastructure. So that's another area to kind of keep an eye on.
Yeah. And the other thing I would add along those lines, too, is I personally saw customers in Azure that it was all of the existing instances were running during the height of COVID-19, but an inability to spin up new instances. So, you know, that theory of, you know, oh, the public cloud is always this unlimited capacity. It's like, well, no, at the end of the day, it's always servers in a data center and there's only so many of them.
Right.
And, you know, if you grow unexpectedly fast, you might push the limits without a doubt. So we saw some errors here and there.
Yeah. What'd you think about Google?
You know, they're super interesting to me still. I still kind of shake my head at them, to be very honest with you, because I feel like with Kurian being there, they're really starting to develop a different personality than they did in the Diane Greene days, and what I mean by that is they're really more sales focused now and really more, I would say, getting it together as a BU. And they're starting to push some strategies, right? Like we're starting to see Anthos more and more. And you're starting to see, which is probably really good when you think about this, Anthos kind of interacting with other clouds as well, like AWS and Azure. And why would they do something like that? Well, you know, when you're the big dog, you don't need to acknowledge the other clouds because you're the big dog. But when you're the underdog, you need to figure out, okay, like, oh, yeah, you're an AWS customer. Well, you can still work with our stuff. Or you're an Azure customer. You can still work with our stuff. So they have this really interesting two-pronged approach of, yes, they're, you know, I know they've personally a lot of SEs and, you know, they're hiring some enterprise sales forces and they're kind of doing the old, you know, get the feet on the streets kind of thing. But they're also at the same time pushing tools that are multi-cloud adoption all at the same time.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, you and I always have this kind of behind the scenes conversation where, you know, we'll talk to somebody, you know, we'll interview somebody and their stuff sounds kind of cool. And we'll be like, yeah, that stuff's very cool. It's kind of the tip of the iceberg of some new thing. And then we kind of go, oh man, wait till they have to deal with the ugliness of the enterprise, right? Like that's the real trick that you realize that, you know, you are prepared to deal with the enterprise. And I feel like Google is, and I, you know, and the thing with Google is always, you know, we've always said like, it's the, you know, can you crack through the hardcore Google culture, which is we only do things Google ways and it's Googly. And I mean, the stuff they've announced, whether it's like, hey, we will manage stuff outside of the Google Cloud, which doesn't sound very Googly, or, you know, like we will host and run a data center specifically for SAP, which got announced like a week or two ago, which sounds very, you know, almost, you know, IBM servicey or something along those lines. And you start to realize like, you know, they now have somebody in charge who really understands the ugliness and the things that you have to do to deal with, you know, the complexity of enterprises. And, you know, they're hiring some people that have some of those chops. And, you know, so Google, I suspect, is going through a really big transformation of like, okay, if we want to play in this game, like we're going to have to do all these things that, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, Google people would have been like, we will never do that stuff. Like, why would anybody do that stuff? And it'll be interesting to see if it turns into, you know, numbers and appreciable market share. But it definitely feels like they're starting to get around that corner. He's driving these things to get them to go like, hey, if you really want to be number two by, what is it, 2023 or 2024, like, this is what you have to do. And, you know, it sounds like they're putting a lot of money behind it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about the other one that comes up on the show, which is Oracle.
Yeah.
You know, and I, you know, I will say this, I still, you know, good friend of the show, and past guest Leo Leong, is, you know, still intimately involved over there. And, while I hadn't talked to him personally about it, I still see his LinkedIn posts and there's still a lot going on over there. And like, what is your thoughts on Oracle Cloud? I mean, are they a legitimate fourth player yet?
You know, it's hard. It's really hard to analyze Google Cloud. Oracle Cloud. I think because it feels like there's such a gap between the SaaS stuff that Oracle Cloud does, which I think they actually do a pretty good job of, right? I mean, it's they're moving, you know, ERP, CRM, human capital management sort of types of things, database as a service. Like they've done a pretty good job of either migrating those things to become SaaS services, or they acquired companies that were SaaS services already. You know, I think that business does okay, right? In the same way that like we don't cover a lot around Salesforce, but you know, those are things that every business uses and so forth. You know, and then they get to the infrastructure level stuff and you kind of don't hear about it until just recently. Like they signed a big deal with Zoom and they signed a deal with 8x8. And you know, the word on the street is the reason that's happening is because, you know, they're not killing people on, you know, on bandwidth pricing. And killing people is a terrible word, but they're not, you know, they're not overcharging or, you know, way out of whack. They're actually, you know, much more market efficient about network pricing. And, you know, people have long said forever that, you know, network pricing is the thing that, you know, it's kind of like the dirty little secret about AWS that nobody talks about. But, you know, I don't know that you can sustain that for a long time because, you know, network pricing is always going to be a matter of, you know, reach and OpEx or CapEx and other stuff. But, you know, for now, maybe that's their niche, which sounds like a weird thing for Oracle because you always think about Oracle as just being this rock solid, highly available, you know, enterprise thing. And, you know, this seems more like a commodity sort of thing. So, yeah, I still can't figure out Oracle. Like, I don't know if it's, you know, just they don't want to market themselves that way, but that's a game they'll play down in the trenches or what's going on. But yeah, I still don't have a great sense for Oracle. I still don't think they spend enough to be a big player to do it at a broad thing, but they are, you know, they're back in another trick, you know, another thing of hiring a bunch of people that, you know, are smart people and have experience. And so maybe, you know, maybe this is another run they're going after.
Yeah. And two thoughts on that. Number one, you know, going back to Simon Wardley days, you know, when he's been on the podcast, and it's been a couple of years now, but he always said something that stuck with me is, you know, this is back in the OpenStack days, and was like, OpenStack gonna, you know, and was there going to be more public clouds and these kinds of things? And Simon point blank said, you know, unless you have billions and multiple billions to just dump into this market, you don't have a chance. And so, is Oracle willing to be a loss leader to the tune of billions to catch up in this market? Don't know. I don't know that answer. But, yeah, you know, putting that out there as a thought. And then the other thing is, you know, I actually relate this kind of like, hey, let's take the network costs out of it thing to a startup. And so, you know, I've talked to a few different startups a couple months ago, and it was interesting to see again in the kind of as a service thing, and they're, you know, charging on a monthly cost, and they're doing some of these other things, and they're doing some, you know, all the right things. But then, you know, when I would kind of pick under the covers a little bit, I'm like, so what are you doing about the network costs? And they're like, oh, no, we're just absorbing that.
Right.
And
right.
I'm like, well, so you're basically setting your VC money on fire.
Yeah. Well, I think it begs the question, and I think we've talked about this before. Like, you know, is it really possible to be a, you know, tier one public cloud provider by yourself? Like, and what I mean by that is, like, you know, Google has ads. You know, Microsoft to a certain extent has the cash cow of like Windows and Office 365. You know, Amazon obviously has, you know, retail. Like Oracle, I mean, Oracle has the Oracle database as a cash cow, but that's somewhat under attack from open source and public cloud. You know, like Alibaba has, you know, looks a lot like Amazon. They have a, you know, huge retail business and other stuff. Like, it does sort of beg the question, you know, can Oracle really become that without that other cash cow? Because, you know, like IBM's proven you probably can't necessarily do that, right? Even though they have the mainframe cash cow, you know, those cash cows don't throw off enough, or they don't generate enough kind of ability or mindset within the company to say, like, we're going to spend that much more, right? And there's no other business that they even have internally that's going to drive it, right? Like, the other ones all have something that makes sense as to why they do these massive capital outlays. And I don't know that the technology companies that don't have that other cash cow or that other kind of core business can compete in this thing. And I think that's, you know, maybe the best way to think about Oracle is, I don't know that they play the same game, even though they you know, comport to do the same services.
Yeah. Even the public clouds need a sugar daddy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And the VCs aren't going to back it that much. You know, VCs aren't backing things that much. So, cool. So, you know, we've kind of gone through that. We've kind of hit on a lot of the technology stuff. I want to hit on a couple of kind of, you know, forward-looking things. So, you know, 2001, for those of, you know, some people may not have necessarily been around them. So when the internet crash happened in 2001, we saw in the next couple of years, we saw a ton of new innovation, right? We saw, you know, innovation in, you know, new ways that we interact with the web. You know, we saw software as a service take off. You know, it was kind of the early days for even like mobile phones, you know, so iPhone came out in 2007. You know, so we saw a lot of innovation happen. 2008, the financial crash, we saw a different behavior, which was like a lot of cost cutting, some people moving, you know, from sort of CapEx to OpEx into the public cloud. Are you thinking we're going to see any big trend out of 2020? I mean, obviously we talked about, you know, working from home and what does that sort of mean? Do you feel like this had the same magnitude as those two in terms of, you know, really going to drive some new innovation that we just hadn't thought of before?
I don't know about innovation per se, but I think it drives the new operation models. And again, going back to the as a service, right? I think it's going to drive flexibility and the requirement for flexibility into the operations model going forward, and this ability to much more quickly scale up, scale down, and this idea of buying fixed resources and maintaining them. I think this is just another nail in the coffin.
Yeah.
For something like that. I mean, everyone's going to realize really quickly, oh shit, like my business and my income that I've depended on for years and years and years, I mean, it may dry up.
Right.
And so how can I dynamically react to something like that? And everyone's just kind of always assumed that those infrastructure and those operations are going to be there. But what if, you know, you have reached a point where you need to scale down?
Right.
I don't think we've ever, as an industry, really thought about it as much as we have here in the last couple months.
Yeah, no, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think where we're going to see maybe some big potential innovation is around kind of, you know, how people work. And I don't mean that by like, oh, you know, some new cool feature on Zoom. I mean, like, you know, think about, for example, like how a movie gets put together, right? So, you know, the actors aren't all sitting around, you know, just on a stage in Hollywood waiting for the script to get written. Like, not only do they get pulled together and they got to work out schedules, but I mean, like, they've got to, you know, figure out where they're going to shoot things. They're going to, you know, bring in the crews to film things and the, you know, the food crews that are there. And then that kind of goes off and then the editing stuff happens. Like, but they talk about these movies as if, like, you know, it's things come together. They're all around each other for however long the period of time is. It could be, you know, 3 or 4 weeks. It could be 3 or 4 months or whatever. And they just kind of, then they kind of go away. And there are these pods of resources that can get pulled together in some structured way. And a lot of it is, you know, how well they're organized and produced and funded and so forth. But I'm wondering if we won't see some sort of thing like that happen. Now, not necessarily that everybody becomes a temporary worker, but, you know, will we see companies that start to think about how do we organize ourselves instead of having these, like, you know, fixed groups all the time? So like a fixed marketing group or a fixed, you know, way sales is done or whatever it is, to something where they go, we need to be structured such that we're somewhat modular so that if something comes along, some opportunity comes along or whatever, and then they start thinking about the tools that would have to go along with that, right? How data, how, you know, sort of knowledge, past knowledge is kept, how best practices are put together. I think that'll be maybe an interesting kind of phenomenon to watch, because if businesses start going like, hey, you know, I don't know when the next pandemic's going to happen. I don't know when the next financial thing's going to happen. But these things sort of tend to go together once you start to have a little more chaos. Like, that might be an interesting thing to watch.
Yeah. And I'll add a super practical follow-up to that. I think this is another nail in the coffin for VPNs. I don't know about you, but I'm working from home and I've got all my resources. And again, everything's kind of as a service and a lot of stuff's in browsers these days. And I have a VPN. I never VPN in anymore.
No.
It just made me think of this is this morning they, you know, at my company, we announced a new thing and they're like, you know, put it all over Slack. And, hey, you need to go to this. And I went to it and it didn't resolve. And I'm like, oh, man, do I need a VPN? And I reach out to the people. I'm like, do I need a VPN for this? And they're like, yep. And I'm like, oh, man, okay. Well, that significantly decreased the chances of me going to the site on a regular basis now. Because you have one site or one thing that you have to VPN. And I mean, it's just, you know, I think we're, as an industry, we're moving beyond stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's, yeah. SSO works pretty well for most stuff. I don't see a lot of VPN usage. I mean, obviously, like, you know, I've heard some interesting conversations where, you know, a lot of teams that have developers are struggling with that because the VPN was locked down to certain things and, you know, developers were used to being able to do certain stuff on their laptop and, you know, now certain things either got blocked or whatever. And so they're looking at some of these solutions that are sort of like remote ways for developers to not so much like access a desktop VDI, but like remote IDE through a browser. We've seen a couple of acquisitions there. So yeah, I think that's definitely going to be another one of those things. Last thing we'll talk about real quick is conferences. That used to be not only a big topic on this show, we would sort of hit on, you know, when this conference came along or that conference, what were the big announcements? Obviously, we would travel to some of them. I don't suspect we're going to see anything for 2020. Have you learned anything from the virtual conferences? Have you seen anybody do them really well or, you know, any takeaways so far?
Yeah, I will say from an industry standpoint, I didn't personally attend it, but there was recently, I want to say it was a Microsoft one. Was it maybe like a virtual Microsoft build that I remember seeing good social media buzz around? You know, shameless plug, my day job. I actually did one last week, and we kind of took a very different tact on it. And without going into the details, I will simply say, you know, the key was make it super interactive, right? Like people could comment, people could ask questions. And it was kind of semi-live, if you will. Everything was recorded ahead of time, but recorded, you know, with green screen, really high quality, lots of editing. And it was a hell of a production. It wasn't just, hey, let's start a Zoom and click a record. And so I think us, I think we as an industry have to figure out how to do these and how to do these so that it isn't just us talking at an audience that may or may not be involved, right? And I also think this further shortens attention spans, right? Like, even if, you know, some of these conferences go virtual, no one's going to go for, I'm going to sit in front of my laptop for 2 or 3 days.
Yeah, no, that's going to be hard.
So it's going to completely change how events get consumed going forward.
Yeah, I think two things I've sort of taken away from that. One, I think, and we learned this a long time ago, kind of in the podcasting thing, you know, even if you have interesting content, and I think your point about the interaction piece is really important. Like, I've seen people talk about, like, hey, we wanted to interact during the keynote. We wanted to ask questions. We wanted to, like, I think that's an important thing people should be doing. But I think the other thing we learned is, like, if the thing I'm watching is either sounds bad or looks like you're in a dungeon or something, like, people will turn that off quickly too. So, you know, there are lots of inexpensive ways to get lighting right, where you record the audio right, to, you know, to present well. Like, I think we're going to see sort of a new uptick in sort of, you know, the representation from your home office looking, you know, looking very presentable. I think that's really important. What was the other thing I was going to say? The other thing I wish somebody would come up with a service for, and I don't necessarily know how you would do this, but, like, so let's say you wanted to go to some event and you were going to go. And like you said, I'm not going to sit there for 2 or 3 days and just kind of do everything. But it'd be nice if you went to the event or you signed up for the event and then it got done and they sent you a thing and they said, hey, all this stuff's available. I would love for some way for it to go, hey, these are the 5 or 6 that I really want to watch. Please find some way to schedule those into my calendar. Like, I would sit there and watch them for an hour, but, like, I'll never remember to go back to them, right? So, you know, like, I'd love for some way for it to go, hey, you have, I see a free 2-hour block on Wednesday. How about one of those, you know, we fill in with this? I'd be like, yes, please do that. I don't know how they would do that remotely to my calendars, but, like, I don't know of any other way to remind me to go back and watch this thing that, you know, a week ago I really wanted to watch. And now I'm like, oh, I've either lost interest or I'm busy or whatever. But I feel like maybe that would be an interesting feature for the conferences in 2021 to start planning for some way to get the content to you, but, you know, not overwhelm you with it, or, you know, something along those lines.
Yeah. It's such a good point, because whether it's in our professional lives or our private lives, you know, like, I've got queues a mile long, I think, for everything.
Yeah.
when it comes to replaying content, watching content, there's not enough hours in the day to consume the content. And I live by my calendar. And my life, you know, unfortunately, is highly scheduled.
Yeah.
And so if it doesn't get scheduled, it's just on the backlog.
Right.
And I don't get to it.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. So, well, cool, man. As always, whenever you and I get together and do a show, they tend to run a little long. This one looks like it's creeping up on 41 minutes. You know, any last thoughts on the first half of 2020, which feels like it's lasted about 10 years?
Yeah, well, exactly that. I mean, I'm hoping the second half of the year, I hope everyone stays safe. I hope everyone does settle into a routine that is, you know, both the new normal, but also, you know, is something that is sustainable long term. I think probably the biggest thing for the second half of the year is I'm hoping a certain amount of stability in our industry and stability for everyone out there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. You never want to see, you know, big swings or layoffs or anything that affects people. I think the other thing I would say is, I think with all this stuff going on, there's probably not been a better time in a long time for people to think about creative ideas. I think right now, you know, we don't know how long these things will last. We don't know how people will start changing behaviors. But I think I've seen from a lot of leaders inside of different organizations, like, they're very open to new ideas, because, you know, this thing will pass hopefully at some point, but it will have long-term effects on how people think about stuff or interact with your customers or interact with markets. And so if you have creative ideas, even if you feel like they're small, like, this is probably not, there's probably not been a better time to sort of come up with a creative idea and pitch it to somebody if you want to go work on something new. So I'll throw that out. There are a lot of leaders who are very interested in ideas, how do we make this new, you know, craziness, you know, into something that can be normalized? Not necessarily meaning going back to what we used to do in the back in the days.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So cool. You want to take us home? You want to wrap it up? Take us home?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, again, thanks to everyone for listening, and hopefully you stuck with us through this entire thing. The one thing too I would add is we don't really talk about it a whole lot, but we'd love to see reviews. So, you know, whether it's Apple, you know, the Apple Podcast reviews or in other places, again, tell a friend. We really love doing the show. We really love helping out the community. But also give us feedback. Let us know where you want us to go in the second half of the year. We are always looking for direction. We're always looking for new podcast guests and new folks to talk to. So, again, thanks for listening. Please tell a friend, and we'll talk to everyone next week.
Thank you for listening to The Cloudcast. Please visit thecloudcast.net to find more shows, show notes, videos, and everything social media.